Good morning, WEFT. Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. This is Higher Ground. I am Eunice Buckner Boone.
Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on air are those solely of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, board of directors, or the WEFT Associates. And this show is going to be dedicated to the Affordable Care Act, which is time for you to renew if you haven't. And we're going to have a guest on who will talk about that, Kathy Sweeney. And it's also a tribute to a Chicagoland DJ who died, Herb Kent. And you may not be familiar with him, but if those of you from Chicago know Herb Kent. Herb Kent has been on the air for a long time. And this was one of his ending songs, Open Our Eyes. And I've got to play it for you. And then we'll be back.
Open our eyes, that we may see to follow thee.
Open Our Eyes. Yes, yes, I remember that song. And I shouldn't say just those who live in from Chicago remember Herb Kent. There's a lot of people. He's been on the air for a long time. He was inducted into the DJ Hall of Fame. And it's quite an honor. You know, back then when he started, he was in his 80s when he died. back then, they didn't have a lot of availability for people of color to be on syndicated national airwaves, and he was able to do that, worked his way up from the bottom up. And so maybe the next time I come on, if I remember, I'll do a little more tribute to Herb Kent, because indeed he was a voice and a phenomenon. For those who remember Herb Kent, I mean, Dusties, he coined the phrase Dusties. And if you've heard that, Dusties are old 45s. You remember the 45s? If you don't remember 45 records, well, you know, they had that scratchy sound. If you heard, when you're listening, you heard the scratchiness of what those records were. They were the smaller LPs. They were the... It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. But he coined the phrase Dusties, because Dusties were... old music. He would play old music, and people listened and recalled and memorialized things they were doing when those Dusties were playing back in the day, you know, back in the day, Dusties. Okay. So I also said that I invited Kathy Sweeney to be Sweedler. I'm sorry. I don't know why I want to call her Sweeney. She's like, okay, if she was listening. Kathy Sweetler is a consumer economics educator at the University of Illinois Extension, and she did an article in the News Gazette several weeks ago titled, Health Insurance Can Help Protect Financial Security. And in it, she discusses how important it is that you buy insurance, that it is a protection, financial protection, because if you don't have some sort of insurance and you have some sort of illness, the cost of being in a hospital, the cost of hospitalization is just ridiculous. It's out of the roof. And so therefore, if you don't have coverage, it is essential that you have coverage. And also the Affordable Care Act. There's also an article in a newspaper, News Gazette, Obama's health plan is failing, where it says here, mockery of President Obama's promises for his all-encompassing government-run health care program. The latest in a continuing series of problems is that the insurance rates keep going up by substantial margins. The Illinois Department of Insurance reports the premiums will be going up 40 to 50%. So it doesn't sound very encouraging. There was another article in the News Gazette recently. In fact, it said unhealthy inflation. So why does insurance rates go up higher than anything else? You know, insurance rates are going up higher than everything. Certain things that you think, well, why wouldn't other things go up? But insurance rates, they're going up higher. So the pros and cons of, what is the pros and cons? Is there a con to Affordable Care Act? Well, one of the reasons for the Affordable Care Act was because it lowers overall. Oh, my goodness, I can barely read. The biggest benefit is that it lowers overall health care costs. It does this by providing insurance for millions and making preventive care free. People receive treatment before they need expensive emergency room services. Pre-existing conditions. You cannot be denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions. You can keep your children up to the age of 26 on your health insurance plan. So young people are also insured because they too need insurance. Young people can have a health accident that may cost a great deal of money. So this, we're going to talk about why you need to have some insurance, and that there are subsidies. You don't hear much about those subsidies too, because I guess it sounds too much like we're giving away something free. But affordable care, I think it makes sense. Don't you think it makes sense that people should have access to some reasonable health care, right? I'm going to play a YouTube. Yes, you know I do that. I'm going to play a YouTube. And this YouTube is by Alan Ethnovan, A Balanced View of the Affordable Care Act. And there will be some question and answer series at the end after he talks about some of the Affordable Care Act. And I'm going to start this not at the beginning because I don't think it's recorded at the beginning. But if you want to look it up, as I say, you can do that. It's Alain, A-L-A-I-N, Ethnovin, Ethnovin, was Enthovin, E-N-T-H-O-V-E-N, A Balanced View of the Affordable Care Act. And I think it's pretty good in terms of giving you a general overall view of the Affordable Care Act. And also, you know, some of the things that need to perfect on, other than the criticisms, which is we just need to get rid of it. I don't think that's a very good thing, because I think anything that's, it's like being giving birth to some new idea or some, changing some habit that you have, it's going to require some labor intensive and perhaps some discomfort in order to do this. But affordable care, that means more people are without health, are with health insurance, instead of having that insecurity of what if I get sick, or I got to be real sick before I can get some help. So this is from the Stanford Graduate School, and I think you'll enjoy this. And I think what I'll do before that is do my underwriting announcement so that I won't interrupt, so that when I can play as much of this recording as I can. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including state employee insurance, is accepted. There is also a self-pay sliding scale. You can contact Kevin Elliott or his staff at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That is E-L-L-I-O-T-T, CounselingGroup.com, or call 217-398-9066. So we're going to have a full show today, and I think I don't like to call it a show, but Higher Ground will indeed give you something to think about, and it will be informative. That's important. And also in making your decision to get coverage, I know I have to do the same thing. I've got to go to the marketplace. And so we'll discuss that and also address some of our concerns. So hopefully this recording that I share with you will also help you in terms of making your decision. And I think the audience participants, the ones who ask questions, they seem to be in mid-range. I would say 40 and, you know, and up. But the questions are quite vast, I think, and they're open-minded. So let's tune into that.
...2018 when this thing kicks in. And a lot of employers are starting to work hard, including Stanford. How can we avoid that tax? How can we keep the premiums down? They also, to pay for the expanding coverage, they reduced Medicare hospital patients, essentially payments. Essentially, with Medicare, the government was saying each year we'll increase your payments by the amount of inflation and the cost of doing hospital business plus 1%. Well, they took the 1% away. Probably fine. They created what are called accountable care organizations to modify the incentives for doctors and hospitals caring for Medicare patients. The idea with the accountable care organization is, again, to bring some teamwork and cooperation into the situation by doctors and hospitals accepting responsibility for moderating the growth in per-person expenses. And if they can hold the cost to less than the projections, then they get half the savings. Now, I've been rather skeptical of that because I think the incentives are far too weak. It'd be better if we just had a market and they said, here you are, guys, if you don't really, you know, give patients a good deal, high quality, good service, and so forth, you're just going to lose your business. Instead, it was, if you don't slow the growth in spending, you won't get this bonus. Sometimes the way I put it is there we are in the boardroom with the doctors and the hospitals, and somebody in the back of the room who's skeptical says, you mean to tell me if we cut our revenue by $1 million, then we'll get to keep... They'll give us back $500,000? Well, why don't we just keep the whole million? I mean, there's a problem with the incentives. I think one of the problems is the people who designed this law didn't study economics very much, at least they don't. And finally, there was the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which was to 15 wise persons would sit back, and if Medicare spending rose too much, then they could essentially make recommendations that would have the force of law without checks and balances and so forth. That hasn't happened so far, and it probably won't. My guess is nobody's going to want that job. Now, what have they done? I've talked about the big problems of access, cost, quality. What does it do for these problems? Well, one good thing is they encouraged and subsidized the adoption of information technology. Another is to penalize hospitals for, in Medicare cases, for readmissions within 30 days, a generally accepted marker of a poor treatment. Generally speaking, I would say, with our very large quality problems, the Affordable Care Act didn't do much. For access to care, the Act provided Medicaid for individual adults with incomes up to 1.3 times the federal poverty line, and for people with incomes higher than that, through the exchanges, there would be subsidies for people with incomes all the way up to 4 times the federal poverty line. That's for a family of four, that's like $9,400. Guaranteed issue, guaranteed renewal. That is, if an insurance company is selling an insurance plan to the public, they have to take all comers, the sick and the healthy. So, guaranteed renewal, you can't take away the policy when the person gets sick. And an individual mandate, that is a law that if you don't have health insurance, you have to pay what economists call a free rider tax. That is, if you don't have health insurance, you know that when you get smashed up on the freeway and you get taken into the emergency room, by law for many years, the hospital has to take care of you, at least stabilize you. And so there's been growing concern about free riding. I mean, a lot of people are, there's a kind of health insurance there. But the Affordable Care Act is definitely reducing the number of people who are uninsured from something like 50 million to 30 million. With complexity, I think it just made the whole problem worse. I mean, the thing is bewilderingly complex. What about fragmentation? Well, I talked about an accountable care organization, a team of physicians and hospitals that contract with Medicare to slow cost growth while maintaining quality, and then they can keep half the savings. I think accountable care organizations are an important step in the right direction. I just regret that they didn't make the incentives stronger, because they need to be. It's a step toward an integrated healthcare delivery system. You hear a lot of complaints about counterproductive taxes. To pay for all this, they imposed a 2.3% excise tax on drugs and devices, and the device manufacturing companies complain that we are starting to pay taxes on the revenues even before we make any profits on the product. And so it's been, I think, justly criticized as being anti-innovation. Similarly, there's a tax on insurers that, this is kind of an obscure point, but nobody likes insurance companies, so we're going to make them pay. Well, the problem is, the tax falls heavier on insurance companies that bear risk than half of employed people are in employers who are where the employer is self-insured. There's no insurance company maybe to process the claims. Anyway, it's a tax that works against risk bearing, which I think is a mistake, because what we need is to get insurance companies bearing the risk and then to making deals with doctors and hospitals to share the risk, to transfer the risk for the cost of care to doctors and hospitals. And I think the employer mandate is anti-jobs. At least my first reaction when I saw the whole thing was, if I was the CEO of a company, I would say, don't hire anybody. Wait till, because it takes away the ability. Of course, all employers, like 98% of employers of more than 200 people, do provide health insurance, but it takes away their flexibility and their ability to modify it to save money because it's all under federal regulation. So, summary comments. Getting everyone covered is an important goal. I believe in that. I really think it's wrong to have a situation in which many people don't have access to health care because, especially children, because they can't afford it. And we really ought to have universal health insurance. And the Affordable Care Act is a serious attempt to get there. I hear some people criticize it and say we want to repeal it and replace it. And then I'm listening. Do I hear what the replacement is going to be? I mean, that's what, you know, I have some friends who want to, I'd like to hear a little more about, the Republicans, I think, could improve their whole story if they would get together and come out with a credible and coherent alternative. I think that the whole thing is far too complex, and it keeps changing. Nancy Pelosi famously said along the way, we're going to have to pass this law in order to find out what's in it. And I'm pretty good friends with our benefits manager, because I chair the advisory committee, and from time to time said, well, 4 years have gone by, and we still don't know what's in it. The president is changing it all the time, slipping this deadline and that. And I think that there's some serious overreach. I think we could have had universal health insurance in this country without passing a law that forces Georgetown University and Notre Dame University, as employers, for example, to provide what they consider to be abortifacients, that is, abortion-causing drugs. We just didn't have to take that issue on in this problem. Professor Uwe Reinhardt at Princeton described it as an ugly patch on an ugly system. That's referring to the complexity and so forth. And I think it's too bad that they didn't break the link to employer-sponsored insurance and go for a simplified, real universal health insurance, which, for example, in the latter part of the last decade, Senator Wyden from Oregon and Senator Bennett from Utah proposed, as did the Committee for Economic Development. There are ways you could do it. I mean, there's just a lot wrong with it adds to the cost and complexity, et cetera, of employer-based health insurance. We're all used to it, but it is at the heart of why we have these problems. So there we are. Thank you for your time and interest. And good luck with your affordable health insurance. Questions? Medicare, right? Pardon me. They want to give you a mic. Wait for the microphone. Yeah, right.
Yes, Medicare, when it first was passed, wasn't perfect either. There have been a lot of changes that have made it much better over the years. Yeah. And how can we change the Affordable Care Act to make it better, too? What would you suggest? Well, to a single payer or like Medicare or do something else?
I think, first of all, with the subsidies, they are means-tested, so that the exchange has to go to the IRS and get last year's tax reported, et cetera, and taxable income reported and so forth. So I would say the subsidy payments or the premium support payments ought to apply on a flat basis across the income spectrum and not be means-tested at that level, except for if you want means testing, which I think is okay, then you would say these premium support payments would be reported to the IRS and included in the recipient's taxable income. So that would reduce some of the cost cost to the government. But that would be one major thing. Let me just say, if you say, what do I think we ought to have? Depressingly, it has been 30 or so years since I proposed and published in the New England Journal of Medicine Consumer Choice Health Plan. And the idea was, in effect, universal health insurance based on regulated competition in the private sector. So everybody, the whole country ought to look like what we do at Stanford, which is we offer our employees a range of choices where they are responsible for the costs above the cost of the low-cost plan. And what happens is people will migrate to what they see as value for money.
Okay, in the interest of transparency, I have to reveal that I'm a retired physician, and I'm currently now a hospital medical administrator. So I've dealt with some of these things. One of the problems even with the exchanges and some of the plans is that people tend to sometimes pick the cheapest plan, the bronze plan, which makes them have a 40% deductible. And I had to deal with a woman the other day, came to our emergency room with a $5,000 bill, and here she had $2,000 that she was responsible for. Now, she didn't have very much money. She complained, like, well, I thought I had insurance. You know, that seems to be, it's a kind of a trap for many people. They think they're insured, but they actually aren't completely insured.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I wish I had included that in my prepared remarks. Some of this is pretty lousy insurance, you know, with very high deductibles. And for a lot of people, they're just not going to be able to afford the up to the deductible. So I think what happens there is there are some people in the political world for whom it's more important for us to be able to say they're insured than for them actually to be insured. In my consumer choice health plan proposal, there'd be a standard coverage contract, and there'd be much less deductibles. The cost consciousness would come in the premium. Yes?
Question.
Pardon me?
Has there been any estimate made of how much it's costing the nation not to cover the 20 million people?
I expect there probably have been. One doesn't come to mind immediately, but that's a good question. Because those people, I'll tell you just an example. I was talking with Senator Bob Bennett, who was a senator from Utah, that I thought a very good guy, but sort of fairly conservative, but the more conservative people in Utah fired him. And I remember he was talking to me about this plan that he and Senator Wyden were proposing. He said, you know, I say to people, we already have universal health insurance. I mean, you can go to the hospital if you're sick and be cared for free, but the problem with that is that's a very expensive way of doing it, because those people should have had access to a primary care doctor who would catch their problem early and treat them and keep them from needing the hospital. And so I think there is a real cost to having people without health insurance, but it comes in a disability and work days lost, school days lost, you know, et cetera. And it'd be a good project to try to add that all up. Yes.
So do you think, or how far are we from a truly universal health insurance similar to what's in UK or Canada?
Well, we are at least 30 million people away from that. I mean, that, you know, it's somewhat uncertain. There are varying estimates. I just picked that as what the Congressional Budget Office said some time ago. The number will vary. There are many states with Republican governors who decided that they're not going to expand Medicaid up to everybody at 1.3 times the federal poverty line. And so the score would be better if they, as some states are doing now, negotiate with the government saying, well, we are willing to expand coverage, but we want to do it in a more market-oriented way or whatever. So it's an uncertain and variable number, but take 30 million as an approximation. Yes, back here.
How does your, I think you called it the community health plan and or the Wyden-Bennett plan, break the linkage to employment or not? And how do these plans address free riding?
Well, let's see. In that model, your insurance would not be linked to employment. In fact, I even what's wrong with employer-sponsored health insurance? It locks most people into open-ended fee-for-service because employers don't have a very good record of offering choices. It means you lose your job. If you lose your job, you lose your insurance. Employers use it to compete for employees by making the insurance ever more generous. You know, we pay for everything. Come to work for us, we pay for everything, et cetera. Including nobody understands their health insurance. It's new. Probably if I asked for a show of hands here and said, how many of you have actually read your health insurance contract? Actually read it. Take a show of hands, and if somebody raised their hand, I'd say, and did you understand it? So in Consumer Choice Health Plan, I had in mind a relatively simple standard definition of the insurance contract. It wouldn't include a very high deductible. But you wouldn't look to your employer anymore. You would look to the exchange where you'd get a subsidy. Now, what I proposed was that, like Stanford, the low-priced plan would be paid for. And if you wanted something more expensive, then you'd have to pay the difference, and that would bring market forces to bear. And Wyden-Bennett, a similar idea. Now, what about free riders? Well, the Affordable Care Act does have what economists refer to as a tax on free riders. So if you don't, you could have health insurance free, mister, and if you don't, then, you know, you'll have to pay this tax. Now, I do think that the free rider tax on the Affordable Care Act is going to be problematic and difficult to collect and enforce and so forth. But that's the best answer out there.
Dr. Antoven? Oh, I have the microphone. Wait.
Oh, here.
Thank you. Great talk. I'm married to an MBA. I'm a physician. And I have a question that's been talked about in the doctors' lounges and in the boardrooms of hospitals. You so casually referred to the 30-day readmission rate as a marker of care somehow. And are you aware, or do you have a comment on that, we have no control over the non-compliant patient, the mentally ill patients, and those with chronic diseases who leave against medical advice, or they bounce out, don't take their medicines, and they come back within 30 days. And we care so much about those patients, but we have no control over their behavior once they leave.
Well, it is a challenge, and I just think... and I think you have to work on it. The problem comes from, I think, in large part, that when the patient leaves the hospital, they ought to be part of a delivery system that right away picks them up and puts them into the ambulatory care system and works with them to make sure that they have their medications and that they take their meds and you know, do whatever they can. Instead of, you know, in the hospital I've experienced, wife has baby, and in a wheelchair we take her to the hospital door, and then the car pulls up and put them in, and then, you know, goodbye, without a lot of careful preparation for what's supposed to happen after they leave the hospital. There are going to be some within 30-day readmissions for the many reasons that you enumerated, but it's important to work on those post-hospitalization problems. Yes.
How many years before it becomes evident to Congress that there's a big flaw in the act, whether it's cost containment or some other portion of the act, and Congress has to do something new, and then what will they do?
Well, one thing is Obama and the Democrats have no shortage of critics who are pointing out the various flaws, and so it's hard to pick up a newspaper without reading about one or another of the flaws in the Affordable Care Act, and I've mentioned a few. Whether and when the Congress will act to fix them, it beats me. But I would say the direction they ought to go is to make it more universal, more cost-contained. One of my big complaints about the Affordable Care Act is I think nobody should just be offered open-ended fee-for-service fully paid. I think, like Stanford employees, you ought to have a subsidy that pays a fixed dollar amount, pays your way into a good quality integrated delivery system or whatever is out there, and then you have an incentive to choose the economical system. And will we ever get there? I don't know. You know, we might. Probably not in my lifetime.
Dr.
Antoven? Yeah.
Hi. Oh, okay. Thank you for your decades of wonderful work in this area. I'm delighted to hear you today. I'm an OBGYN physician. I just want to try to encourage you to open your mind a little more about the reproductive health issues. I see women in those decisions. And, you know, in America, we are free from religious persecution. That's how America was founded. And I think that if we've agreed that women deserve reproductive health, we've agreed that women deserve that, and that needs to be part of our health insurance, regardless of religious organizations having their own personal points of view. So I try to encourage you to change your thinking on that.
Well, one good thing about breaking the link between employment and health insurance, I probably should have. Next time I do this, I'm going to put that on the slide. Is then the employer is not involved in the issue of the contents of your health insurance. And I just don't think it's a necessary or appropriate thing to have the employer involved in that. It ought to be just out there on its own merits. So, that would be one. It seemed to me it was unnecessarily seeking or bringing about a conflict that didn't need to occur. Yes?
There's a practice that puzzles people in billing for medical care. When you get a bill,
you got to get the mic. Here it comes.
About that. I'm puzzled by the difference in billing between what the insurance company pays and what there's a number that's like four or five times as high that appears on the bill, which, as far as I can tell, applies to anybody who can't afford to pay at all. They're the only ones that have to pay that number. And that doesn't make any sense to me. And it's true of hospitals, it's true of doctors, et cetera.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. Let me explain where how could this thing happen. It turns out that hospitals have a very substantial number of patients who got there through the emergency room. And if this is a hospital that is not in the network of the insurance company covering the patient, then the poor guy is at their mercy, and they can just, and that they make a lot of money that way. Because people say, well, why do they do that and nobody pays that? Well, some people do pay it. It's the poor people who are there as a result of an emergency or urgent situation. And I think that's wrong. I think I would favor some kind of a law that would say you can't charge more than, you know, something like 1.5 times Medicare, or, you know, some reasonable limit. Otherwise, it's just extorting people from, you know, it's taking advantage of the fact that people are sick, and especially for a nonprofit institution, I think it's particularly inappropriate and wrong. Maybe the thing to do, you know, people have made the point that hospitals engage in a lot of business that for-profit companies do also. So the for-profit companies refer to the nonprofit hospitals as not tax-paying hospitals. We're investor-owned tax-paying hospitals. Well, so that's been an issue. Perhaps the way to get at it would be to change the law to say if you are a nonprofit hospital, then you will not charge emergency patients more than 1.5 times Medicare or something like that. Oh, want to give him the mic? Oh, somebody back there.
Professor Antoven, some have suggested that due to the intransigence of Congress, the divisiveness, that the inevitable outcome for the country is a Canada-style socialized medicine for the masses and a separate tier of premium care for those who can afford it. Do you think this is where we're heading?
You know, I don't know. I think the Canadian system works pretty well for Canadians, but I don't think it would work here. I don't see that out there. I mean, it's a good question. Will Congress act on something? Only reluctantly and in a complex and confused way. Dr. Burnett. This is Dr. Burnett, my friend.
Recent study by University of California showed that health care delivery systems controlled by physicians were at least 20% cheaper than medical care delivery systems controlled by hospitals. And there are many ways that physicians, even in the fee-for-service system, can be peer-reviewed and under control and have some future limitations and costs. I don't see any in hospitals, and I think about the Affordable Care Act and having the group of hospitals and physicians. It's still going to be dominated by the ones that have the capital, which are the hospitals. There are not lots of hospitals per population in many areas of the country. And what do you think is a solution to make this more efficient, a system from the hospital side, not just on the medical side?
Well, that's a very good question. I might just say Dr. Burnett has been a pioneer in this area he's been a physician leader in physicians getting organized to bring down the cost and improve the quality and so forth. Bob, I just read that article yesterday. The author, Jamie Robinson, is a good friend of mine, and through the Integrated Healthcare Association, I've kind of seen that research progress. And what it happens is the hospital-owned medical groups cost 1.41 times the non-hospital. It's a very marked difference. Now, my reaction to that was, well, you know, the problem is with hospital administrators, their whole orientation has been heads and beds. Keep the hospital full to be able to pay the overhead costs, which are usually large, and keep the CT scanners scanning and keep all that stuff to bring in the revenue. And the whole orientation of the efficient delivery system is let's do everything we can to keep the people healthy and keep them from needing a hospital and see if we can empty those hospital beds. It's kind of a completely different orientation and mindset. And so I don't think that hospital administrators have the right mindset and ethos to be leaders in healthcare systems, and that it ought to be physicians like you and your colleagues who pioneered in creating physician organizations.
Yes, my question's sort of a follow-up, but with a little different spin. The United States has far and away the most expensive health care per capita of any developed country, and we have worse outcomes on average.
Right.
And all those other countries where they spend less money and they get better outcomes basically are single-payer systems. And for the life of me, I cannot understand why there isn't more serious, you know, consideration of a single-payer system in a capitalist country where we should be concerned about keeping the cost down and getting better outcomes.
Well, I guess it's partly a problem that I have an attitude which was developed. I spent 4 years as an assistant secretary of defense, and my job was to bring cost effectiveness into defense decision making. And that was a quixotic task for a young man. And what I learned was things like the ideal weapon system is built in 435 congressional districts. You know, and if I look at Medicare, the pork barrel, the log rolling, et cetera, I just don't see any. I don't want to sound like a right-wing fanatic, but this is in the Democratic administration that I learned this. It's just there are not enough people seriously interested in the total, holding down the total cost. Well, let me come at it another way. I think it was Justice Brandeis who said that our system of government was built to prevent the arbitrary exercise of power. You know, so you think of Madison, and ambition must be made to check ambition, so nothing can get done. In contrast to the parliamentary system, which is a system that's very good for managing public programs. So Brandeis, anyway, say our system of government is not built for the effective management of public programs. A huge difference between the parliamentary system and the system of checks and balances that we have. Just to go on for a moment, I've done some work on the British National Health Service at the invitation of British people come over, and they've got their problems. I grant you, for half the share of GDP, they get better outcomes. I think for some interesting reasons. And anyway, so I was asked to, how could we bring some market forces and competition into the British National Health Service? And so Mrs. Thatcher picked up on my ideas and tried to implement them, and some of the doctors didn't like it, and I was invited to lecture to the London Medical Society, and this doctor got up and said, we have an elected dictatorship. She can do whatever she wants, and there's nothing we can do about it. And so I said in reply, well, that's all very well, but I come from a country that doesn't have any government. It's all checks and balances. And so I just don't think our form of government is built for the effective management of public programs. And we can see that all over the place. Yeah.
And that is a kind of a single-payer system.
Yeah.
And I would wonder how many people in this auditorium on Medicare would want to get rid of it.
Well, I think it ought to be... Okay. I think Medicare ought to be phased into a new model which resembles what we do with Stanford for our employees. That is, the government... And by the way, several bipartisan commissions and groups have recommended that we do this. One of the problems with Medicare that we've had is that we can't afford it. Other than that, it's very nice. And so the alternative would be what are called premium support payments and competing systems. And I think that would be the way to go. It comes back to Dr. Burnett's question about what are we going to do about the expensive hospital-controlled delivery systems. And my favorite answer would be subject them to real competition, informed consumers, cost-conscious consumers, and they'd have to bring in leaders who want to give value for money. Yes.
Okay. I worked in the Senate in the early 90s with a bipartisan for Senator Lieberman and a bipartisan group of senators who were moderates, trying to implement essentially your policy in this mainstream coalition managed competition act. And the key thing that I wanted you to just bring out a little bit more in this discussion, because I think it's really critical for people, especially as we go into voting. And I will disclose that my group at Yale built the 30-day readmission measures, and my husband works for Obama, so I have my points of view. But I hear you saying break the link to employer-mandated plans, and also that what you're proposing is subsidized or supported minimum plans with a competitive environment, a managed competitive environment. Now, I want to make sure that people understand that I would like you to just contrast, if you can, that what advocates in Congress right now who are advocating changing or repealing or wholesale change of the Affordable Care Act, that's not what they're talking about, because you're talking about a universal coverage, guaranteed benefit, and managed competition. Whereas people who are, you know, running campaign ads right now to pull down the Affordable Care Act are, as you say, they don't really say much, but that's not the direction you're going. You're going in a very constructive, essentially universal coverage direction. They are advocating for just wholesale repeal, or we're not sure what. And I'm wondering if you can draw that contrast, because there really is no mainstream senators anymore, right? It's a very polarized environment.
Yeah. I want everybody to understand, I'm not an adherent of either political party. I'm in the party of the plague on both your houses. So I'm trying to avoid being partisan, and I put the point earlier very, very gently, which was, I have yet to hear from the Republicans when they say repeal and replace. I have yet to hear, and I'm listening for the replacement. Three senators from someplace got together and put out a plan, but it didn't deal with the big problems. So I accept that point that I think the critics ought to be able to explain, this is what I would do, which I've done in writing.
Professor, we have one there in the third row in the center, and then we have one over here. We're just about out in terms of our time, so I want you to all be aware of that. If you want to be elsewhere, feel free to do that. And I think the professor might be able to take that.
So my question is about the accountable care organizations. And to me, that's about the only way right now that's linking. Right now on a fee-for-service, there's no link between the service provided and the outcome.
Yeah.
And the ACO is the only model that will link service and outcome.
Right.
And so it seems like the plan to roll that out or to apply it across the health system is really very limited. Can you talk a little bit about what the plan is for bringing ACOs out? And it seems like they're just a very small fraction rather than this much bigger part that they should be.
Okay. Let me put it this way. We've got an awful lot of people in the healthcare system that are still back in the 19th century. You know, I told you about the 19th century. And maybe it's because they were taught the residency in the residency program, don't rely on anybody else. You know, you're individually responsible. So we've got a lot of mindsets from those olden days that have to be changed. And I think the idea with the Affordable Care Act, with the accountable care organizations, the idea was to start that process, to get doctors and hospitals to collaborate with some responsibility for quality and cost. And the ACOs do have a lot of quality measurement involved. And so that was a step, as I said in my talk, a step in the right direction. I just think that the incentives ought to put it on steroids.
Okay, so now I hope you got a lot from that. Anyway, a lot of information. And also, to look at the Affordable Care Act, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect plan, but it's a plan that is in place right now, and it has helped over how many people? I think 30 million people are now insured, as opposed to it was quite a few people uninsured before. And that there are, that oftentimes you hear like a negative, only hear a lot of negativity about a particular new concept, and you don't hear how it's working. And one way in which the Affordable Care Act is working for those who have children who are under the age of 26. And, you know, they too can have health problems, and they can also have accidents that will require hospitalizations or whatever, and they're in college, et cetera, and they need insurance and whatever the reasons may be. But it's costly not to have insurance. So to insure your child up to age 26 is one less worry for you, and also it's not as expensive. The other thing is that people who have pre-existing conditions, that used to be a real big concern for people. If you had a pre-existing condition, they could drop you also because there was like a cap on how much they were going to pay the insurance. So they say, oh, well, we're not going to take care of you no more. You're too costly to us. Or if you have a pre-existing condition, you couldn't get health insurance or it was very expensive. And so these things are reasonable things we need to look at when we think about the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, Affordable Care Act. And when people are not chronically sick, that is better for the community. When a person does not wait until they're very, very ill, or they don't use an emergency room as a resource, only health care, access to health care, the emergency room. So these are costly concerns that the Affordable Care Act tries to address. It doesn't do everything perfectly, but we don't want to throw it all the way out. And I think we're hearing way too much where it sounds like this is a bad idea, and it is not a bad idea. Some of us will pay more because we can, but there are also subsidies that say we will have some assistance, people who need that. So it's not a bad thing. So I have here today with me on Higher Ground, oh, let me just say this, WEFT, Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. I have with me in the studio today Kathy Sweetler, and she is a consumer economics educator at the University of Illinois Extension. And I was telling you earlier that I read her article in the News Gazette, and the title is Health Insurance Can Help Protect Financial Security and Why We Need to Buy Health Insurance to Protect Ourselves from a Known Financial Risk. And so I thought, well, let's have her on because now it's time for the, what is it, November, Kathy?
Good morning.
Yes.
So, yes, this is a timely time because the open enrollment for the marketplace, if you're not insured through another means, opened November 1st, and you need to make a choice on what you want to do by the end of January. But I kind of like that idea that we get out and do it now before the holidays so we don't kind of forget about it. So a great time to be talking about what's happening with health insurance and how can we make it work for us.
Okay, so tell us, Kathy, why we need to do this and why it's important that we think about it now and not wait.
Well, I think one of the things is that for a lot of us, we go along, you know, most days and most years with pretty low health costs. So it may be that we have that occasional sinus infection that we need treated, or we sprain our ankle, or something else happens that, yes, we don't want it, and it doesn't, you know, but it doesn't cost so much that it causes great financial grief. But when something more major happens, then we know that people have a really hard time, especially when they don't have health insurance. So, for example, what we know from research is that medical debts contribute to over half of all debt collection actions and almost half of all bankruptcies in the U.S. you know, especially before the ACA went into effect. And so when we're talking about health insurance, yes, we want to have it help with our day-to-day, but maybe even more important is for us to have health insurance for those major events when we have an accident that really is serious, or we develop a chronic disease, or we need surgery, or something like that. Because otherwise, without it, you're going to see a real financial burden that will have a ripple effect throughout your life. You're going to end up with major problems looking at, you know, losing your financial security for today as well as your financial security down the road. It may really impact whether or not you can retire and what that's going to look like. So there's different ways to look at health insurance. And one way to look at it is, I need health insurance to protect me from these major catastrophic events.
So what is it that may make us hesitant about looking at health insurance in that manner?
Well, I think, number one, none of us like to think that's going to happen to us, right? I mean, and it's the same thing when we buy insurance for our homes. We don't really expect that our home will burn down, but we do buy home insurance just in case that horrible thing happens. But health is even worse, right? I mean, we don't want to think about medical things happening to us. So we don't like to think about buying it. And then I think the other piece too is that it can be expensive. And so that's for real, right? That we want to, it's just hard sometimes to pay that amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need is to kind of, but also I think, put this into perspective in terms of what's happening in our country.
Okay.
So for one thing, most people about 54% get their health insurance through the employer. So if somebody's getting their health insurance through a workplace or through Medicare or Medicaid, they don't need to be making choices about enrollment right now. So especially for any of those folks who've been hearing about these large premium increases supposedly through the marketplace, and you're on Medicare already, or you're about to go on to Medicare, don't go on that health insurance marketplace. Your health insurance plan is Medicare, and you're not allowed to go through the health insurance marketplace.
So Medicare is for people who are?
People who are over 65 or in different places through that.
Okay.
And so we just need, sometimes I do have people who are maybe getting to that point where they could be getting into Medicare, and they're like, well, I don't think I'm going to have Medicare anymore. And it's like, that's not true. That's kind of one of those myths that's out there. We still have Medicare.
Mm.
And that's what people should be using when they're eligible for it. So really right now, we have about 6% of people in Illinois who are using the health marketplace. And so they'll need to be going on to the website or meet with somebody that can help them check out, you know, what's the best plan for them this year. They may want to make a choice and change. But we also have another 6% of Illinois consumers who are uninsured that haven't made a health insurance choice, and they need to do that.
So this 6% would be not necessarily employed people, or would they be partially employed? Who are these 60% of?
It's a variety of people out there, interesting enough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're at a workplace where they can get that health care benefit, then they're probably getting it through their workplace.
Okay.
But there are people who are part-time employed who don't have health insurance benefits. They could be at a company that's small enough that they don't offer health insurance.
Okay.
Because it's not required if it's a smaller employer.
And self-employed?
It could be self-employed, absolutely. Mm. Could be not employed.
Okay.
And so not in that place. A lot, we are still encouraging younger people are probably the ones who see themselves as not needing health insurance. They don't tend to think about those catastrophic mm-hmm. type events, and they tend to be more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, and although we talked about the fact that young adults up to the age of 26 can now stay on their parents' health insurance plan if the parent chooses to pay for that piece of it, mm-hmm. to include them in there. Not all young adults have parents that have that health insurance, or, so they may be in that piece too. So okay. we're definitely talking to our younger adults.
Okay. It sounds expensive though.
And I'm not going to minimize that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not quite as expensive as perhaps we've been hearing in the media.
Okay.
We've been hearing a lot about expenses going up across the board for everybody. And while it's true that health insurance premiums and medical costs have been going up, they're going up at a decreasing rate.
Okay, explain
and so
that.
That's really important to understand. And it's confusing, right? Because we're talking it's up but not. Mm-hmm. So when we look at going back to 2001 and we look at like 5-year time periods, what we see is that from 2001 to 2005, over that 5-year period, costs were going up over 60%. So not 60% every year, but over that 5-year time period. And now we're seeing we're down to just around 20% in the last 5 years since the ACA went into effect. So 20%, that still means that your costs have gone up every year, but not at the same rate. And okay. In fact, they're going up slower than was predicted when the ACA went into effect.
Wow.
So I see that as a positive sign. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we're there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean our medical costs are where we want them, but it is a positive sign. Now, the other piece is that it's clear that premiums are still going up within that health insurance marketplace for people that aren't getting their insurance through the workplace or getting their insurance through Medicare or Medicaid. But when you go into the system, and you can do that by going to getcovered.illinois.gov, you will put in information about, you know, are you a single adult? Are you married? Do you have children? And you'll put in your estimated income. And then the premiums you see will reflect the fact that 85% of the people in that marketplace are getting a government subsidy. And so the premiums you see will already have that subsidy subtracted. So you'll see your real cost, but it's not going to be quite as much as what you might have heard in the discussion going on nationally. Mm-hmm. So again, you don't really know. And I'm not even going to try to quote amounts because it varies with all these variables. Mm-hmm. So, but what I am trying to encourage people to do is go check it out. Go see what it would be for yourself. Don't assume that it's going to be more than you can afford or that you want to pay. And if you're not comfortable with your workplace insurance, you can check out what it would be on there instead.
Wow.
And I know people that have done that, and mm-hmm. I've talked to them, and they've said, well, my workplace still mm-hmm. turned out to be better mm-hmm. For my costs and what I would be covered. But that's just a small group of people I've talked to. So, mm-hmm. you know, it just takes a few minutes to mm-hmm. run your own numbers through and to get a feel for mm-hmm. what that would be for you.
Wow. See, it's like scary, scary, scary the way you hear it. It's just like scary. You just don't even want to try. You don't want to even attempt to look.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I understand that it's complicated and mm-hmm. it's dealing with a topic, you know, being sick that we don't like to talk about, not that we even like to talk about money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all those factors coming together, and then it's just easier to put it off, not mm-hmm. get it done. Mm-hmm. But we do need that insurance for our financial security. And so I encourage people to take a look at it, see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I had
lots of stuff there. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Fast. No. That's great. You know, one of the things that I thought about when you were saying that we don't like to think about being sick, but we pay for health and we pay for our car insurance. I won't say everybody does it. Sometimes, you know, people are still driving without insurance, but it's almost like, you know, you have to do that. And so you have to have insurance. And so we take care of our car. In a sense, we pay up front for the use of having the privilege of driving. And in case we have an accident, we do it up front without really thinking sometimes a lot about it. I know I don't as much. And this thing about our health, though. Isn't the Affordable Care Act also designed to encourage health care, more of a preventive kind of approach to health as opposed to disease-based health?
Yes. And so two things there. So, yeah, let's talk about the preventative thing first. So definitely what we're looking at here is trying over time to change our focus from instead of kind of okay, I'm seriously ill, now I'll go to the doctor, to, and maybe really way I'm accessing that is through the emergency room, which is one of our most expensive modes, to I'm going to take some preventative care and hopefully not get to that seriously ill piece. And so, for example, especially under for people who, I mean, not just especially, but a really clear example of this is now people who receive Medicare can really be signing up for a lot of preventative care that for no cost that wasn't available to them before. And so if you're a recipient of, if you're using Medicare right now, you might want to, you know, check with your healthcare provider and say, you know, what are there some preventative healthcare things available to me now that didn't used to be that I could be taking advantage of, such as things like vaccines and cancer screenings, as well as self-management programs for like diseases like diabetes, alcoholism, depression. You're entitled to a free wellness visit every year now. So those are kind of just good examples of this preventative mode. The other thing that you kind of mentioned was that requirement, you know, that we are by law, that we have health, car insurance when we're driving, at least at some level. And health insurance is now a requirement by law. So, and the penalties for not having health insurance continue to climb every year. It's a sliding scale type thing. For 2016, you're going to be looking at some hefty penalties if you don't get your health insurance. And so that's another thing for people to be aware of is if you're going to pay out money, do you want to pay it just as a penalty or do you want to get it to go towards your health insurance? So we're looking at penalties of either 2.5% of your household income this year or, whichever one's larger here, $695 per adult and almost $350 per child, going up to a maximum there of just over $2,000. That's a pretty high penalty, in my opinion, for getting you nothing. So, so, and that'll cut, you won't see that during this time period of November to end of January. It's going to catch up with you when you go to pay your taxes, because that's when that's going to get applied. And any monies that you would have been receiving, it's going to be subtracted out. So any refund you would have been receiving, it's going to get subtracted. So now is the time to go look at that health insurance marketplace if you don't have health insurance and figure out what are you going to do to try to avoid this penalty.
Okay, for some people, it sounds like, you're forcing me, like you have to have car insurance, you're forcing me to buy insurance when I don't, against my will.
Yep.
What is
it? I agree. That's exactly what it's doing. And here is one rationale for that. I'm not really here to say that all these things are good or bad, because there's definitely pros and cons to all these pieces. And it's a real balancing act between rights, responsibilities, costs, benefits, all that. But the thing is when people aren't insured and they have serious medical needs, they receive care. Might get it through the emergency system, but they're going to get care. Somebody pays for that. I think what the rationale here is that everybody needs to be paying their piece. And so that we can kind of get control of this. And in the same time period, not just everybody should be paying their piece, but hopefully we can lower the collective cost and that would be better for our community and our society as a whole. So in this state, you know, really the income level where you before you have to pay for health insurance, where if you are a lower income, they've expanded that that limit through Medicaid. So again, in Illinois, you know, a third of our people are receiving health care either through Medicare or 19% of that third are getting it through Medicaid. So again, you know, people may not realize that they can get into this system through either Medicaid or through a subsidized plan, and it may not cost them as much as they thought. Now, I'm not saying it won't cost you. I'm just saying take a look, see where you are, balance that against the fact that you will have to pay a penalty if you don't get it, and let's just look at this in a different view.
So Medicare is for 65 and above, and then Medicaid is for those who are
lower income. Okay. Or maybe low, and it does take into account how many people are in your household and things like that. So I think we just really, we need to take a look at that. Now, one of the things, when you go to look at health insurance, we tend to focus on the premium. The premium is the amount that we pay on a monthly basis. And the premium matters, right? Because it's got to come out of your budget every month. But what I would also like to encourage people to take a look at is the deductible. The deductible in a health insurance plan is the amount that you have to pay before the health insurance starts to pay those costs. So when you're comparing plans, look at the premium, but also look at the deductible and see what is comfortable for you, because if you have a higher deductible, you'll be paying more costs before your plan kicks in. Now, one of the things we've always said to people is if you want to get your premium down, raise your deductible, whether it's for car insurance, home insurance, or health insurance. That's a basic principle. Usually, as your deductible goes up, your premium goes down. And that's fine. But I think one of the things that is driving conversation and that people may not quite have put all these pieces together is that in our workplace, for our job, you know, when we get health insurance through the workplace, we are seeing that people's deductibles are going up much faster than other costs. And so what essentially is that people are having to pay out more for those little amount, the relatively little amounts that come up. They're not that little, I get that, but I mean relatively, over the year before their health insurance even kicks in. And we might need to be planning for that. So if you have a deductible, you're going to have to come up with a way to plan for those costs in order to be able to manage them. And when you look at the insurance that's available at getcovered.illinois.gov, you'll see that the different plans have different deductible amounts. You want to compare that. You want to decide where you're comfortable.
I have no idea what's going on here.
So the other...
Hello? Do we have a caller? He's going to have to try back again. I'm not quite sure why that call didn't come through. Let me try this one. Hello, caller?
Hello?
Hold on 1 second.
All right, I'm getting
a... Let me hang up. Let me hang up. Okay, caller, I'm sorry, I didn't get that right. I'm not quite sure why it didn't come through. But I'd like you to try again, 359-5483. Let's see what happens. We're going to try this again. Hello, caller?
Hi.
Oh, great. Good.
I got you online. So my name is Ross. I'm from Urbana. And I just had a – am I on air? I don't
yes,
really
you
know.
Are. You are on the air.
Okay, great. So I had a comment about it, about what the whole discussion, and it's kind of something that I've been thinking about, you know, and she was recently making a comparison between healthcare and auto insurance.
I did.
And, you know, one of the things that I've heard, and I'm politically very independent, kind of go from both angles, but one of the things that I've heard and thought about is that car insurance, you pay according to the risk factor that you are, you know, and if you're a lower risk factor, like your age goes up or, you know, you have clean record, then you pay less for health insurance. Whereas this system, you pay the same that everyone pays. And I understand that was built in the system so that people who had, you know, health problems could afford it. But at the same time, then that it becomes like, you know, and the forcing thing. So you have to, you're forced to pay, you know, by the government under the threat of, you know, government action. You know, and those two things kind of make this different, you know, fundamentally different than things like car insurance, because car insurance, you choose to drive or you choose to do these things. And one last point about it is that in making this healthcare system, I mean, when it was originally written, it was written by people within the medical industry, and it doesn't take into account anything like alternative medicine or self-medical care. Or medical care outside of the medical system, we basically delegitimize all those things like chiropractic and these other things, which do work and work great for some people, maybe not for other people. So those are just three of my comments, and I'll just let you go ahead and address those off the air.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Ross, for calling.
Yeah, no problem. Bye.
Would you respond to that, Kathy?
Well, I think there's, you know, definitely
ACA has not taken care of all our problems. That's obviously very clear. And it's not working perfectly. Our medical system is not working perfectly for people in a lot of ways. I think some of the risk factors, like your age, are still taken into account in the health insurance models. But you're right. I guess as a society, we made a decision that people with pre-existing conditions still deserved health insurance. So I don't think I have a comment beyond that.
Well, one of his concern is, and we did talk about it briefly, and that was just a sense, once again, there's one more thing that I feel like I'm being coerced or forced to do. And there are many people who drive and they don't have health insurance. I mean, not health insurance, car insurance. And if you're in an accident, it becomes problematic to the person who is insured. And the person who is not insured, they're still thinking, well, you know what, it's not my issue. I'm not going to have to deal with it because I didn't prepare for that. I didn't. But in a way, it is a safe measure. It helps us to be more cognizant of our driving. You know, when we have certain requirements in order to be drivers, it's not just you can purchase a car and then you have the, you can just drive, but you have to be conscientious as a driver. There is your life behind that wheel that's important, and also the life of other people. And also with these laws and these requirements, we have a responsibility to others that if we do injure another person or damage the property, that there's something in place that says, you know what, you just can't walk away from that and say, oops, mistake, somebody else take care of it. But no, there's something where you've made a plan put in place where you are also being responsible for that. So I think in that respect, I look at taxes sometimes, and we may not realize it, though, but our taxes are there, too, so that the things that we get to use without thinking about, oh, the water, is it safe? Is it clean? Or the roads that we drive on, there are traffic lights and things like that. Those things are taken care of, the sidewalks, certain things that the city takes care of so that we don't have to think about it, that our taxes are there in place to do that. So I do get it that there are things that I don't want to pay for with my taxes. I don't want to pay for, what is it? What is something I don't want to pay for? I don't want to pay for war. I'm anti-war. But on the other hand, my taxes go towards that, and our taxes also go towards health care, too, I think, providing health care overall. So I get what you're saying in that respect. It doesn't feel quite like it's a decision you're making for yourself. But some decisions are made for us, and sometimes they work for us in that sense, without us realizing, okay, this is one more place where I'm being asked or demanded or required to act in a certain way or do something. And so, yes, I get that part, but I also get the part where it's important to think of your health. And I think this Affordable Care Act, not only does it just say, well, if you're chronically sick, but it also puts health as a national concern. The well-being of our country citizenry is important, not just as the fact that they occupy this, live in this country, but the overall well-being of our country is important. And it's not just about being sick, although oftentimes when we think of health, we think of health as being sick. It's like, if I'm not sick, then I need to go to the doctor, or I need to start thinking about, no, I'm sick now, so let me take care of my health. Whereas to me, the Affordable Care Act is saying, in a sense, we need to be concerned about our overall well-being, not just about being sick, but how can we be more well as an overall, as a nation, as a country? How can we be more concerned about one another? How can we take care of ourselves better through eating, diet, exercise, et cetera? This has all been part of this a revelation about health. It's not just somebody else's problem. It's our problem. is how well are we as a country? And so I think that has brought into some of the things too, discussions, which he Ross brought up too, is this integrative model of healthcare, which is now looking at other means of how we take care of ourselves. Chiropractic, that's going to become part of it. I think some insurance companies already include chiropractic services in their treatment. I'm not sure about acupuncture yet, but I know acupuncture is going to be a consideration, I'm sure, in the future in terms of, because people are going to be requesting these things. And also other modalities, energy healing modalities like Reiki and all these other different ones. So I think it's in the conversation now, because as individuals, we are looking into those things. We're exploring those things. So the medical model has got to expand beyond the disease focus. It start looking at how do we live.
I think another great example of that is that now people that that need mental health care.
That's right.
That is now a requirement of health insurance plans because of the ACA. And so, you know, when we know, again, that when people are dealing with mental health issues, that bleeds over into our workplace productivity, into our communities, into our physical health. And so, but it used to be that it was very difficult to get insurance plans to pay for any of that. And so now people have that right. I think that is a huge plus. Again, one of the things that's a little tough right now, I think, about the ACA is when you start moving towards this more well-being preventative, is that we need to give it a little time for that we can really see that benefit play out in terms of hardcore dollars and cents. Because it really, while we feel like we've been talking about this for a really long time, it's not been available and been in place for but just a few years.
How many years?
So it actually went, the law was passed in March of 2010, and it's been rolling into the different pieces have been rolling in mm-hmm. order to give time for people to, you know, put them into practice and to put them into place. Mm-hmm. So while I'm not saying that that's super fast, everything, but for example, if you are on Medicare, you're probably very well know about that donut hole for prescriptions, where you could be going along and your insurance would have been paying for X percentage of your for your prescriptions up to 25%, I believe. And then all of a sudden you start paying more for them because you fell into this donut hole. Well, and then after you had maxed that out, then it would kick back in and you'd have more insurance paying. Well, that donut hole is getting shrunk. And so by 2020, it'll be gone. And that's an example of where the ACA is kind of rolling out these things in order to not do something that kind of wax out our whole system at one time.
I wasn't sure if I got the donut hole. I didn't understand.
Well, it's confusing. But what it is that for people on Medicare, their insurance pays for prescription 75% of it, and they were paying 25% of the cost.
Okay.
But when they got to a certain maximum, then all of a sudden they were in this place where they had to pay a higher percentage.
Okay.
And then if they have a lot of prescription costs, which is not that unusual for people who are older, then they would get to another limit and all of a sudden that would go away.
Mm-hmm.
But that donut hole was really a surprise for people because they kind of got used to, you know, on their income paying so much for their prescriptions. They had that worked out. And then all of a sudden they might hit it one year because mm-hmm. of higher costs or higher needs.
Okay.
And they would have to pay more. And
they didn't know why.
And they didn't know why. And it was frustrating and mm-hmm. they didn't have it in their budget.
Okay.
And I think if we kind of, so they're getting rid of that.
Okay,
so
that's good.
If you've been in one of those people that were in that, you're mm-hmm. well aware of it.
So let's listen. So I'm listening to Ross too, Kathy. And one of the things that I think Ross is young, doesn't sound like an old person, and that's fine. But he might think, well, you know, I don't have to do that. I don't need that for myself. You know, why do I have to buy insurance when I don't want to? There may be other things I want to do with my money, like go to acupuncture or Reiki or some other modality that insurance would not cover, because he believes in hiking and taking care of his health and eating properly and getting fresh air and maybe meditation and yoga, which is not necessarily covered by our health insurance plans yet. But let's say, Ross, there may be an occasion where you might be riding your bicycle.
Yes. So not to pick on you, Ross, we really do appreciate
you. Let's use an example.
We'll just use an example. I mean, I know lots of young people who would definitely feel like, you know, that they've got their health under control and they're not going to need that insurance. I'm going to go back to that catastrophe of, you know, you're riding your bike and you've never fallen, mm-hmm. but this time you do. Or somebody runs into you, which in this community we know happens if you're a bike rider. And it wasn't your fault and it shouldn't have happened, but it did. Or you're skiing. You've taken a trip and you're skiing and something happens. Or you're in a car accident. And I really hate to even think about these things. But again, what we can do financially is we can manage that cost for that health insurance. And let's go back to that deductible, because I kind of started talking about that and then we got off of that a little bit. One of the ways to manage your cost, especially if you feel like you are healthy and you're not going to be needing a lot of just day-to-day medical care, is to take a plan that has a higher deductible. And what you're doing there is you're self-insuring for the low-cost risk. So you've made a decision that, you know, if something happens and I end up needing some treatment, I can handle that myself. And I'm going to self-insure for those pieces. But I'm going to use the health insurance for those major costs. And that's what I'm going to use that for. So by taking that higher deductible, you'll have to pay for some of those lower costs if they happen, which for a young person, they might not have any.
But you still have to pay that constant stream of money. And that's what we're looking at, is just that, okay, you're still taking money out, even if I don't have to use it. You're still taking money out. But it's a lower premium.
But you're protecting yourself against that future financial disaster. Yes. And you're protecting your financial security. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there's no arguing the fact that mm-hmm. you're going to pay out money mm-hmm. and maybe you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
All I can say is that's the law.
Mm-hmm. And it does have some benefits to it. And I do get what you're saying. But I also get, too, that there are benefits that come with when you have these procedures in place. And we might not realize, okay, I don't need them, but right now I don't need them, but I need to make preparation. And also, it's also useful, too, that burden of taking care of a big bill is also not just, okay, well, somebody's got to take care of it. And it also discourages, too, the use of the emergency room as primary care for many people, because oftentimes if you go to the emergency room, they cannot refuse to treat you. It's not the best treatment necessarily, because it's just for acute care. It's not, oh, over time, we're going to keep you coming back. We're going to monitor your treatment, et cetera. No, they're not going to do that. It's for whatever's happening right now, and that's what they're going to take care of, or they're going to admit you into the hospital, even if you're not insured, because they have to treat you. But the cost for that is going to be spread out somewhere. Somebody's going to have to pick that up. So if we could get, if you're a young person and you can get your premium low because you're in relatively good health, so then your deductible is going to be a little bit higher because you don't use it, but you'll have that coverage. And that's a good thing. Now, is there anything preventive in there for people who are young? Is there any preventive care? Can you get,
all these things. And so that's a good question. And I'm not 100% sure on the answer, but definitely, for example, I do know people that are in that plan and they got their flu shot for free.
Okay. So flu shots.
So there's an example.
Okay.
So again, preventive, doesn't matter what age you are, you can get the flu. And let's look at this also, too. Like, what if you got the flu and you were out of work for a week? What's the cost? There's mm-hmm. a cost there to you directly. Mm-hmm. So by getting that flu shot, you're doing preventative care. You're helping your overall financial situation. So I want to, again, kind of encourage people to think about, how can I make this work in my overall financial situation? Allow me to keep being healthy. Allow me to work. Allow me maybe to work longer in my life, because we do know that a lot of people have to drop out of the workplace because of health concerns, especially as they get older.
But we're getting better with that. They said, what is it, new, the 30, 50 is a new 30 or something?
We
or?
Dream. Yes, we do. But yes, that's good. I think, you know, we are living longer.
People are taking better care of themselves.
Are taking better care of themselves, and we expect to feel better.
Exactly.
We definitely do.
Exactly.
If I could shift directions for 1 second, one thing I wanted to mention is it's that deductible comes into effect not just for people that are buying it through the marketplace, but also for people who are getting their health insurance through the workplace. So when you have a health insurance through an employer, you probably have a deductible that you have to pay too.
That's true.
And those vary from workplace to workplace. I can't really generalize and say what it's going to be, but the trend is that that deductible is going up for people. That's going to start feeling more and more uncomfortable to pay out, probably, especially if you have any health expenses. But there's a couple of strategies that you might want to just look into that would help you manage it. Because I think from a financial management perspective, one of the things that's hard about medical costs is we can't really predict them. I can tell you what my rent will be or my mortgage next month. I have a pretty good idea about how much I'm going to spend on food, you know, but I can't really tell you what my medical cost will be next month because I don't know what's going to happen between now and then. If we can come up with a system for ourselves that helps us plan for that potential medical cost, I think it makes it a little easier to manage. And we also have two different kinds of plans that can give you a tax advantage on those. And you might want to look into that if you're somebody that's paying taxes, which most of us are. And they're called a flexible spending account. These are offered through your workplace, not necessarily every workplace, but a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And you put money into them ahead of time. And you can calculate out kind of your estimate of what you think your medical costs would be. For somebody like me, I could, you know, I always had a sense of, you know, who was going to need dentist work in my family, who was going to need new glasses. When my sons were young, I always estimated at least one emergency room run a year because historically I knew that that's what we were going to be doing for some, you know, broken arm or whatever. And you put that in, and you don't pay taxes on that money. So it comes out of your salary, out of your paycheck, before taxes. And so depending on your tax bracket, you're going to save, you know, if you're at the 28% tax bracket, you've just saved 28%. So then you can pull money from that to pay your medical bills. Now, like everything that has a tax advantage, there are rules, there are regulations, and you need to look them up and make sure you understand them. For example, flexible spending accounts are limited to just over $2,500 a year, and you need to use that money within that year typically. So you don't want to put too much in because you might lose some, but you could at least cover some of your costs that way. Mm-hmm. Another tax advantage plan to look into is a health savings account. Again, these are pre-tax dollars that can help you pay for a qualified medical expense if you have a high deductible health insurance plan. But the way health deductibles are going, I think more and more plans are qualifying. So whereas in the past we might have said to ourselves, well, I don't have a high deductible plan, so this isn't appropriate for me. I think, again, this is one of those things we might all need to review and see if we now do qualify. Because, for example, in 2016, the IRS has defined a high deductible plan as any plan with a deductible of at least $1,300 for an individual or $2,600 for a family. If you haven't taken a look at your own health insurance plan lately, you might want to check and see what your deductible is and do you qualify for this.
And that's called what now?
This is called a health savings account. You can open these up at a bank or other financial institution. And so it's not necessarily a benefit that you have to get through your employer. It's a step that you can take for your own financial advantage. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about them is that you don't have to spend those dollars you put in on a yearly basis. You can roll them over. So they can only, once you put them in there, they have to be used for medical expenses.
Oh, okay.
So, but again, if you are a person that says, well, this year I've got a higher deductible, I'm feeling like that's going to be uncomfortable if it comes up in any 1 month that I have large expenses and I need that. Mm-hmm. You could make a decision to put so much away each month into it and kind of build that up mm-hmm. so that when you have that medical cost that you have to pay for out of pocket, that you could pull it from this plan. So the advantages I see is that it's on pre-tax dollars, so you don't have to pay taxes on the dollars that go in there. And two, it will smooth out those budget crunches mm-hmm. so that you, yes, it's still your dollars, but you've got a plan and it's not going to hit you all in 1 month. Mm-hmm. And you'll have that kind of built up as a savings account just for medical costs. Mm-hmm. Maybe not perfect situation for everybody, but I think for some people we ought to be looking at this as a management tool.
Okay. So give us the time now with the open enrollment. It started when?
It started November 1st, and you have to finish it by January 31st. But please don't put it off to the last day. That'll just be frustrating to you. Mm-hmm. Just because you might need to gather some more information. You might need to, you just might feel overwhelmed, I think, if you put it off to the last day. The other thing is if you go to getcovered.illinois.gov, you will see that there's a place there where you can click and you can get information about who in our community is providing one-on-one help with this. So if you look at it and you're just like, I don't understand this. I can't tell if my medication is covered. I don't know. I just feel better if I could talk to somebody about it. There's some good resources there that can direct you to the right person.
Okay, so can you give us an example of who these resources would be?
Off the top of my head, no.
Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, would they be one?
I think there's a very good chance. I did look at that when it was a few weeks ago, and now I'm not remembering who was on there. I do remember that we did have resources locally, and I remember that there was more than one. Mm-hmm. So that it wasn't like you didn't have a choice.
I know that Champaign County Healthcare Consumers will help you because sometimes it can be overwhelming just thinking about money
exactly.
and how you're going to, manage your dollars. The other thing, too, I was just thinking about that. I was reading an article in a newspaper, and it was saying that the wages were going up for service workers and people in telecom or – it was in the newspaper. Yes.
That I wrote that?
No, not you. No, not you. It's an article in the newspaper.
Oh, yes. I did saw that in the news that this morning, too.
Yes.
So I think that's national data that overall wages are definitely going up. Of course, our costs are going up too, and we have a back pile, right? So we've had several years where costs were going up, but wages weren't going up. So I think, again, we're seeing a definite improvement in the economy, especially nationwide. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a little more of that in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fantastic. That's mm-hmm. going to ease our budgets, truly.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, that's an average, and I know we have listeners out there who are saying, well, my wages didn't go up.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
So.
But overall, sometimes when you hear about how, we were in that recession for so long that people never recovered from the trauma from it, just the memory of it. Oh, we're actually going through a recession. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So people did not, even when you – it got better. It just never got better because they had this memory about it was not good.
I think we're definitely moving forward. Mm-hmm. That we've come such a long ways from there.
Mm-hmm.
I do my little, individual non-scientific tests of this on campus when I'm working with college students. If I talk to a group of students and we're talking about job benefits and what that means, mm-hmm. I usually ask, how many of you are seniors and how many of you have jobs lined up? I'm just seeing a better show of hands than mm-hmm. I did a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing in our community in that we are moving forward. And I think that's huge. And it's also a time, I think, when it's a reminder to us that every once in a while, we do need to sit down and look at our own financial situation and decide, where are we right now with our finances? What's happening? What can we improve? Are there some tax advantage plans out there we can take advantage of, whether there are house savings accounts or retirement plans? How can we keep moving forward
mm-hmm.
With our finances as well as our lives?
Exactly. And so getting past that discomfort of just looking
Yes.
All right? And that's one of the things you're saying. It's just don't just avoid it, but just go on there and look and see what is available. And the subsidies, if you're eligible for that, it will let you know what is there for you.
Absolutely. In terms of, individualized that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. And just don't go on the what you read.
That's right, even if I write it. You know, well, the truth of the matter is nobody cares about our finances or our health as much as we do
we
ourselves.
Should.
And
that's
we
important.
Need to take responsibility for that. And
exactly.
we need to empower ourselves that we can improve our situation.
Yes.
And sometimes it's a little bit. It's a few dollars here and mm-hmm. a few dollars there. But sometimes it's a big thing, like avoiding humongous mm-hmm. medical costs because you don't have health insurance.
Exactly. But the thing that I like about what your article is informing, and it's also giving people an option to think about something that they perhaps have not wanted to look into, as opposed to an article where it just says, it's just not working. It ain't working. Ain't nothing working.
Well,
it's just a bunch of crap. Everything is just a mess.
Well, one of the advantages of working for University of Illinois Extension is that I get this great opportunity to try to share with people information to help them make good decisions.
Exactly.
And so, you know, what I'm trying to say is, you know, take the information that's out there. Might not be perfect stuff, mm-hmm. but let's make it as best as we can for our own lives.
That's right.
And move forward with that.
And don't be afraid. That's the whole thing, too, is that don't let people frighten you into not taking care of yourself based on what you might think other people are doing or what the society is looking like. It may look like crap in the newspaper and on the news, but your life don't have to be crap. So don't listen to that. That's what I mean. Learn to take care of yourself.
Right.
I was talking to someone yesterday, and this is kind of going off of my little direction, which I like to do. And this person says, you know, I just want to have friends. I don't have friends like I used to have friends and people around me and friends and friends. And I said, so who's your best friend? She said, I don't have one. I said, who's your best friend? Who you think is your best friend? What would your answer be, Kathy?
Oh, well, it'd be my girlfriend that I'm going to go have coffee with.
Who's your best friend? But who's your best friend?
Well, my best friend?
Yeah.
Oh, myself?
There you go.
That's a trick question.
Okay. In actuality, you cannot be a friend, understand what it means to be a good friend, unless you understand what you need in your own self. So you may be asking your friend to provide you with entertainment or keep you from being bored or somebody who's going to be there. You know, there's no such person who's going to be there for you when you need them to be there for you, like when I'm in a bad place. You will always be there for you.
Right.
And that's the best place to be. And so I think it's important that we don't look at the media that is constantly telling us how ignorant and stupid we are, and we're easily misled, and we are not going to vote for our best interests, we don't care, we all greedy, and blah, blah, blah. Those are unhealthy statements and comments that we make. But when we make in comments or statements that are about inspiring and uplifting and encouraging one another, then that will inspire us and motivate us to take better care of ourselves. So I appreciate you, Kathy, for writing this article. And we'll be looking for other articles in the newspaper, right, from you?
Oh, yes. I'm wonderful that we have that opportunity. I'm in there at least once a month.
Yeah. And so Kathy Sweetler, consumer economics educator at the University of Illinois. Look for her in the News Gazette and see what else she's going to be telling us, you know, helping us to make a better decision. I'm going to read the definition of the World Health Organization, who, since 1948, this is their definition of health. Health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. Health. And okay, Kathy, you would say something. Go ahead, sweetie.
No, I don't have anything. Go on.
You know, but if you do, you know, you can jump right on
in
there. Okay. And because we're almost out of time, so you just got 2 minutes to jump in. Okay, and Buddha, this is what Buddha says, and I like this one. The secret of both mind and body is not to mourn for the past, worry about the future, or anticipate troubles, but to live in the present moment wisely and earnestly. There's a lot in this article that says to do that.
I honestly believe that if you can get yourself in a mindset where you look at this without too many worries.
That's right.
You compare premiums, look at the deductible costs, decide what's best for you. Mm-hmm. You can make this decision. It's not rocket science. We can do this, and we need to do this in order to live our lives comfortably now as well as in the future.
And we can do it together.
That's
and
right.
That's what we're here for. All right, then. Kathy, you was great, girl.
Thank
Did you have fun?
Of course. I always like to talk.
And you're getting to see your girlfriend afterwards.
Yeah, there you go.
My best friend. All right. Well, my best friend is in here, too. She come in to see me. All righty. So now we got
Simpson laugh, huh?
We got, yes, and there's Paul Muth providing us with a little Simpson laugh. And we look forward to seeing you. I'll see you the next time I'm on. And thank you so much, Kathy, for being my guest. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank
Let
you
me know
much
when
for
you want
inviting
to.
Me.
All right, Paul.
Over to me.
Yep.
Thank you. Oh, we're all tangled here. We got it. So Medea Benjamin is in town this afternoon for at the Wesley Foundation. I hope I'm loud enough. I'm going to shout that from the rafters. She's a hero of mine, one of the founders of Code Pink and Global Exchange. You've seen her on television getting arrested at the Capitol Hill, mainly. They bought a house near Capitol Hill so they could be a constant irritant to the condominium.